Welcome to this podcast. This is episode 46. My name is Tim Mitchell, and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we also have Jonathan Kuhlein on the line in Mr. and Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there.
Alrighty then. So let's do some fact check, John.
Fact check. So 30 minutes, 22 seconds into last episode, Tim had asked us about the end credits scene in Avengers Endgame, which we never talked about. We never circled back to that one. So I thought I would mention what it was. So for those of you who haven't seen it yet and don't want to, spoilers for the next 30 seconds. The end credit scene at the end of Avengers Endgame isn't actually a scene. It's just a sound. But as they show the Marvel logo, you can hear the sound of what comes from Iron Man. And it's Tony forging his first set of Iron Man armor in the cave. So you can hear it hearkening back to that first scene.
I wonder if they cut the sound in the theater I was in.
38 minutes, according to Tim, the fans of Benedict Cumberbatch call themselves Cumberbitches.
Yes, they call themselves Cumberbitches. There's a clip here I've got, I'll put in the show notes, of Benedict Cumberbatch talking to Graham Norton and Chris Pine about this. And apparently the Chris Pine fans are called Pine Nuts. And so they start asking the women in the audience if they are, they get them to stand up and they have to decide, the three of them decide whether or not they think the person is a Pine Nut or a Cumberbitch. And the women gladly say I'm a Cumberbitch, so I guess it's okay.
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
4233, we're talking about Inside the Actor's Studio. The host is James Lipton.
James Lipton, yes, of course.
4250, you were mentioning a film that he was discussing with, that Alec Baldwin was discussing with James Lipton, where he plays a doctor who gets sued for malpractice, and it is 1993's Malice.
Right, Malice, yep.
And 132, the final season for iZombie, where I was mentioning that I'm looking forward to that, and I wasn't sure how many episodes it is. It's 13. I looked it up.
There you go. All right.
And I watched the first one, and it was excellent.
Good to know. All right. Jaime, do you have something in the headlines?
Yeah, well, first thing we have is a new track from Disney's Star Wars Galaxy Edge theme park. And what we have here is, at least at the time I looked at it, was just a singular track from the Symphonic Suite. It's music by John Williams. It's kind of what you would expect, and it sounds pretty good. I imagine you'll probably hear this ad infinitum when you're standing in the long lines to enjoy the new rides, but that's just sort of the way things
imagine,
roll at Disney Park.
Like a hint? Imagine. You said John Lennon or John Legend?
John Williams. Did I say John Legend?
No. I thought you said John Williams.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought I heard John Lennon. I don't know. That's why I sort of, when you said imagine, I thought, what? Johnny Williams. You mean Johnny Williams of the Lost in Space soundtrack?
Same guy?
Yeah, Johnny Williams. Who knew, eh?
Well, it probably beats the heck out of It's a Small World.
I guess. Well, my first thing in the headlines is we need another prequel. This one is coming to us from, I don't know if we talked about this before, on the Game of Thrones prequel apparently is being produced. So they've got a bunch of spin-offs coming from Game of Thrones, which you thought was over.
Yeah, apparently they're doing one that is based on the previous Long Night, so it's in the sort of endless winter, and they've announced some casting for that too. It sounds promising anyways.
Yeah, Naomi Watts and a name I knew, and a bunch of other actors and actresses who I think are more famous on shows in the UK, I think, right? Like one guy's from Fantastic Beasts, you guys have talked about, right?
Yep. Yeah, but then think back to the beginning of Game of Thrones. Yeah. How many of those actors did you know?
Sean Bean.
You know, you knew some, you know, Sean Bean, and you knew some of the character actors you might recognize from other things, but not a lot of household names. So,
right. Oh, John Chimney.
I don't think it's such a bad thing to see some new faces. I think it's actually kind of helps immerse a little bit better.
Yeah. John Sim is in this prequel, apparently. He played the Master on Doctor Who for a while, and he was also in a really great show. One of my favorite shows called Life on Mars. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, I remember that show. Yeah.
And there was a sequel. What was the sequel called? It was another David Bowie song. There were two shows. They did a Life on Mars they redid it in an American version of it, which is still good. It had a different ending though, which is kind of weird. Yeah. It's about a detective who gets knocked out and wakes up 30 years earlier.
Yeah. I remember seeing, they showed it here for a while.
Yeah. I think they showed that one, Life on Mars, and there's another song by David Bowie, which I'm drawing a blank on right now. That is the theme for the other show. And I think it's the same character, if I'm not mistaken, or it's a lady character as a detective who goes through the same sort of thing. And it's weird because like they got all this sort of knowledge from 30 years of police work, and they're back in the 70s, being put upon and misogynated and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Cool. Jaime, you have something about the Endgame?
Yeah, we're still tracking the box office of this. And as of this article from The Verge, Endgame has earned more than $2 billion worldwide. And when I double-checked with Box Office Mojo, they're claiming worldwide total of $2.2
billion. Only, which, what, 98 more billion to go?
Or quite a bit. Billion, or, well, not billions, but hundreds of millions. Because it looks like Avatar has 2.7
billion. I'm talking about Pokemon with $90 billion in the bank.
Oh, right. No, okay, yeah, I get that. But as far as Avatar goes, I think, although this article doesn't make it clear, I'm going to assume this is not inflation-adjusted dollars. So this has quite a bit to go to match even the sort of normal straight-up dollars, and then to do adjusted dollars from, what, like 20 years ago? Oh, sorry, Avatar is like 10 years ago, probably?
So Avatar's still the number one movie of all time, cover thing?
It's the number one grossing as far as overall actual money, but I think the adjusted by inflation, I think it's still like Gone with the Wind or something.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Just because, again, it played in theaters for like half a year.
Sure.
And everybody in the world saw it, so.
Yeah, but movies did that back then. I don't know if I ever talked about this, but like, you know how movies are like in the theaters for a week, maybe two, three or four, if they're lucky. Back then, movies would be in the theater for like months, you know, on end. Because I guess there weren't that many of them. I don't know, but
yeah, and I think, you know, they wouldn't come to, you know, VHS or, you know,
there was no
home
VHS,
video or on the demand or streaming. So they had, if you wanted to see a movie, you had to go to the theater to see it, right?
Yeah.
I was just actually telling I was talking with Xavier and one of his friends recently, and you know, they were talking about how they envy the era in which I grew up, where all these great movies came out in the 70s and 80s. And I said, yeah, except that, you know, I had to go to the theater to see everything. And they said, well, how many times did you see Star Wars in the theater? And I said, dozens. And they said, why would you see it dozens of times? I said, because that was the only way to see it. You know, we didn't have on demand. Like, I couldn't watch it on my phone. I had to go sit in the theater. And every Saturday, my mom would say, you have a choice. You can go to the fabric store and grocery shopping, or I can drop you at the movie theater and you can watch a double bill of Star Wars and Empire. So that's what I did.
And it wasn't until Laserdisc, like Star Wars came out on Laserdisc. And Laserdisc was super expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it was a high fidelity, you know, movie, what do you call a movieophile or audiophile kind of, what do you call those people who are into movies, high-end?
Anyway. Movie fans. The other thing about those two is that both Laserdiscs and original VHSs, they weren't for ownership. They were rentals. So they were really, really expensive. So if you wanted to own a copy of those during the first, you know, 10 years that VHS and Beta and Laserdiscs were around, they were like $100 a pop. Yeah, they were crazy expensive.
Yeah.
So even then, you know, I think a lot of us got really good at the old the VCR up to the VCR trick, and you made yourself your own copy of it, because, yeah, even just purchasing a copy was prohibitively expensive.
Right. Yeah. All right, you're up next time, I think.
Yeah, in the quest to collect them all with streaming services, Vudu is talking about what it's doing, recapping the fact that it's going to do a original series based on Mr. Mom, which I think was the Michael Keaton version. They're going to be doing a lot of other shows, including Friends in Strange Places, which apparently has Queen Latifah as an executive producer, a science fiction series called Albedo with Evangeline Lilly from Ant-Man and the Wasp, also Turning Point with Randy Jackson, the interview documentary series, Adventure Force 5, which is a movie about a band of tech-minded teenagers who saved their town from aliens. A weekly entertainment magazine with Variety called Variety's First Look. Apparently, also, they're going to test an interactive show, because that's sort of the hot new thing post-Netflix Bandersnatch. And a remake of Blue's Clues, which will be interesting, I think.
Yeah, Blue's Clues and you. Yeah, who'd have thunk it?
And are you signing up for that service, Jaime, in your long collection of services? Anything there appeal to you that you would want to commit to that?
Probably not, unless it was included as part of, like, something else. Like, it's so weird, because Walmart owns Vudu, and Walmart is pushing really hard to compete sort of omni-channel with Amazon, right? Coming from the opposite direction, where they have a whole bunch of grocery stores, retail stores out there in the world, and they're trying to go online, and they're trying to merge that together. So if they had like a Walmart Prime that made sense, maybe I might end up picking it up as part of that and giving these a shot. Probably more seriously, I'd want to check out the science fiction series Albedo, maybe the Mr. Mom series. And if Blue's Clues ends up being a live action remake, like Sonic the Hedgehog that we talked about last time, I'd go and watch that one just out of morbid curiosity.
Yeah.
So when Jonathan first met his wife, Sherry, you know, he must have mentioned to her that he collected comic books, and her first comment upon seeing his collection was, that's a lot of comics. Which leads us to our next story, Jaime.
Without judgment, she said this.
Just a statement of fact.
That's when I knew I could marry her, when she said that completely without judgment. It wasn't like, oh my God, that's a lot of comics. It was just, that's a lot of comics.
Yeah, apparently there's a benefactor who has decided to give their library of 180,000 comics, including Avengers number one, to the first USC, as people from there tend to tell me, University of Southern Carolina. Sorry, University of South Carolina, pardon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this article answers the question of, like, why would a university even accept this? What's the point? And I think beyond sort of the archivist sort of thing that libraries and universities will tend to do, they want to do some research on this and see, like, you know, what are the themes that they can find around race, politics, and gender from all of these different eras. And I think a collection like that makes it pretty obvious, right? Because the media that we consume tends to reflect some aspect of where we are as a society at that point in time.
And did no one tell them that they could do that for like $5.95 a month by getting a Marvel Unlimited subscription? Or
including Avengers number one, Jonathan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, it's a lovely notion, but I mean, really, it's a large financial bequest. They're ending up with this massive collection that will appreciate, and that's not a bad thing to have as an asset for a university either. I suddenly don't think that they're going to be like, well, you can check out this copy of Avengers number one from the library. Oops, I forgot to return it.
No, it'll probably go into the rare books collection, I would think, right?
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, what the fate of the collection will be, if it's going to be something that's accessible to staff and students, or if it's going to be something that you'll have to, you know, there'll be a security guard who walks you in and lets you look at it.
That's what I think, the special collections type thing that Tim talks about, where you have to do, at the very least, the special gloves, right? So when you touch the paper, you're not destroying it. It's probably going to be preserved in acid-free, I don't know, plastic, I guess. I don't know what the latest and greatest is for preserving comic books. And then you probably also have to do the research on site, right?
Like,
you
could
just take this home and take it to the bathroom while you're writing your doctorate, right?
Yep. The one of the highlights of my pop culture covering career was when a friend of mine who worked in communications at DC Comics, when I was in New York City, he said, come by and I'll give you the tour. And one of the premier things to see there was the vault. And the vault had their collection of rare comic books and antiquities, original art, and all these different things. And there's literally, you know, men with guns standing next to it. And it's got like a, you know, 2-foot thick steel door that closes up at the end of every day. And but I mean, it must have had, you know, I mean, some of it's incalculably valuable. It's, you know, original Jack Kirby artwork. And, you know, like they had the original for the Superman versus Muhammad Ali, and, you know, like unbelievable stuff in this collection. But you literally had to be watched at all times when you were in the room, because they had, like, while I was standing there, they showed me the comic that was like the first appearance of Wonder Woman and the first appearance of, you know, all these different characters. It's astonishing what this collection has. I'd love to get my hands on, you know, 180,000 comic collection and just spend, you know, a few days in there.
Cool. Hey, by the way, just sidebar here. So I got this really rare Macintosh manual, Jonathan, and the boys on the other podcast were saying that I should put it in some sort of bag that's like, you know, not a Ziploc bag.
Right.
So I don't know what does one do with that?
Yeah, you can get acid-free bags. I mean, depending on the size of it, you can get different bags. I'll send you some links. There's plenty of options for ways to preserve these things so that they don't deteriorate.
Right. Okay, cool. Which brings us to one of the comic books I used to read when I was a kid, which is Spider-Man.
Yeah. Indeed. So, we got our first look this week at the post-Endgame Marvel Cinematic Universe. We got the first full trailer for Spider-Man Far From Home. We had gotten the trailer before, which was more of a teaser kind of trailer that showed us a little bit of Mysterio and Peter going on his adventures in Europe. This time, spoilers for those who haven't tuned into or watched Endgame yet, but we really got to look at sort of the aftermath. So, you know, the trailer shows Peter in his, you know, sort of post-endgame funk where it's 5 years later and his, you know, he's mourning the loss of Tony Stark and he's, you know, not in a good place, it seems, and is reconnecting with his friends who clearly all also died during the snappening. So the trailer is pretty interesting and it drops a few real sort of tantalizing ideas out there. The one that really caught my eye was the discussion that Nick Fury has, where Nick basically says, you know, we need your help. We've got this problem. The snaps, the three snaps that happened, the one that Thanos did and the one that Hulk did and the one that Tony did, have actually split a hole in dimensions. And so now there's the multiverse for us to explore. So the idea is that Mysterio is from this other dimension. That opens up a whole lot of interesting possibilities, I think, for storytelling, for where they could go with the MCU over the next 10 years. If they're going to have a multiverse, that opens the door to how they can bring the X-Men aboard or Fantastic Four or other things. Or it could just be that Mysterio is a lying weasel because we know he's a villain and that this is not the case and that he didn't come from an alternate dimension. He's just a bad guy.
You know, you just spoiled it for me because I was going to ask you, is Mysterio a villain? Because I kind of got the gist that I always thought he was, right?
Yeah, he was in that old 1960s Amazing Spider-Man cartoon, the Spider-Man cartoon, rather, that we all used to watch when we were kids. Right.
But he never looked as good as Jake Gyllenhaal, though.
No, there's no way to render that in a cartoon, how good Jake looks. But no, he used to have this sort of domed helmet and stuff, but the costume is pretty bang on. So, I'm not sure how they're playing it, if this is all just sort of an elaborate ruse or if this is, you know, the actual case, but it's either way, it's compelling. And it'll be interesting to see how they deal with this sort of fallout from Endgame. The Kevin Feige and the Russo brothers have said this is actually the final film in this phase. So while Endgame feels like the end, this movie is actually meant to be the bookend to this sort of phase of Marvel films. And we actually got news this week that they have announced that the next phase of films, the slate, will be announced probably right after that movie comes out in July.
So does that mean that all the current stars are going to go away and we have a new round of storytelling? Is that the idea?
Well, so I guess this is a good spot to segue. So maybe I'll just jump ahead for a second here. So one of the things that was announced this week was Disney's slate of movie releases over the next several years. So they announced when the new Star Wars movies are coming out. They announced when the Avatar movies are coming out. And they announced the dates in which they're releasing all the Marvel movies, but didn't announce which Marvel movies are being released on which dates. So we know the dates that all the Marvel movies are coming out between now and 2022 or 2023, mm-hmm. but we don't know which movie goes in which spot.
Right.
The Black Widow movie is supposed to start filming first. The expectation is that that's going to come out next May. But then the other ones that fit into that slate will be Doctor Strange 2, Captain Marvel 2, Shang-Chi, which we talked about, the Kung Fu movie. The other ones,
probably
Guardians
Black
of the Galaxy 3, Black Panther 2. Yeah, so there's like six or so movies that sort of fit into that sort of slate mm-hmm. over the next few years. We know that they are coming out, but they haven't confirmed which one's going in which spot and what the order is. The expectation is Guardians will be the last one because James Gunn has to finish doing Suicide Squad before he can move over and start doing that again. So yeah, we're going to see those movies, how they all intertwine, how they all tie together, if there is a thematic thing that loops them all together in the same way that we've had this sort of Infinity Stone saga over the first 22 films is unclear, but I think we'll get a little more clarity once we start that phase, or maybe even if we get a little teaser at the end of Spider-Man. Hmm. And just to stay on that overall subject, so Star Wars, we had talked about the wear down, right? We were talking about how people were getting a little burned out because they're releasing a Star Wars movie every single year, and it was kind of ruining the specialness of the Star Wars franchise. And they wanted to reevaluate what they were going to do with those Star Wars stories and how they were going to do this. So one of the things that they announced last week or this week was that Star Wars is going to go on hiatus. So this year, 2019, in December, we're going to see the end of the Skywalker saga and Rise of Skywalker. After that, we're not going to see another Star Wars movie until December 2022, three-year hiatus. And then we're going to get into a cycle where Star Wars films and Avatar films are going to alternate years every year for the next 7 years.
Right, right.
So it's, 2022 is Star Wars, 23 is Avatar, 24 is Star Wars, 25 is Avatar, 26 is Star Wars, 27 is Avatar. Right. So it's, I saw a really funny article on IO9 had a great piece where somebody said, Disney's new movie slate has got me thinking about my own mortality. Where they're talking about movies that are coming out 8 years from now. And you start thinking like, how old am I going to be in 8 years? Where am I going to be? What's going to be happening in my life? 8 years, like such a long time to be slated out on these movies. But
A friend of mine mentioned that too the other day. And my response to him was that I was 17 when the first Star Wars movie came out, and I'll be buying the seniors discount ticket when the last one comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've also in there, they've announced the finally set a date for the New Mutants, which is the last Fox X-Men type movie that's being released. That's coming now. It's slated for April 3rd, 2020. That one had originally was originally supposed to be out this spring. Then it was supposed to be out this summer. Now they've moved it to the next spring. So obviously a lot of faith in that movie. And they've still got, save us all, they've still got an Indiana Jones movie. Indiana Jones Part 5 is still slated for July 9th, 2021.
So is that Indiana Jones on the Chrome Walker?
Yes, and the Walker of Doom.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's quite an ambitious slate. And then, again, we knew this was all coming because they were going to have to amalgamate what they were already doing with the Fox work that was already being done. Avatar, obviously, 5 sequels. So it's actually 2021 is the first Avatar. So Avatar 2 is coming in 2021 and Avatar 5 is coming in 2027.
Yeah, it's a bit ambitious when you think about it, because I mean, like, Avatar was a good movie on its own, but how do we know, how can we be assured that Avatar 2 won't be another solo effort?
Well, I guess it'll be an interesting, I guess if it makes almost $3 billion at the box office, they figure it's worth taking a gamble that people want to see much more of it, not a little more of it.
Yeah.
Plus, they're doubling down by doing Avatar theme parks and, you know, in typical Disney fashion, I'm sure we're going to get, you know, all the spinoffs and cartoons and TV series and product placement and everything else. So I guess they have faith.
Or when are they going to do Titanic 2, I wonder?
Yes. If they could find a way to monetize it, you know they would.
Yes, I'm sure they would. All right. Okay, so we've skipped all over the place here. I'm lost now. I guess we'll talk.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I need a coffee break here, I think.
Yeah. So I'll start with Game of Thrones. There was a story this week that the final two episodes, they haven't leaked, but the information for what happens in the final two episodes has leaked.
La, 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 la. Got my fingers in my ears. La, 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 la.
Yeah, I haven't looked. I don't know if you guys have read this. I haven't looked. I don't want to be spoiled that way. But apparently, the way that they've corroborated that this is likely true, that these spoilers are legitimate, is that the people that have spoiled these things were bang on accurate over their spoilers previously for the previous two episodes. And so they're saying, well, if they knew that, then they probably know this. So if you're interested there, Spotcasters, Spotcast fans, you can go and apparently you can find out before it ends how it ends. So you can, you know, go win some gambling pools or something. But it's sort of weird and sad. I if you've come this far, I can't believe that you'd want be so impatient to know that you would do that to yourself. But apparently it's out there.
So, you know, just to interject here, I saw an article a couple of weeks last week when I was away, and I thought about, I was going to clip it and also go see if I can dig it up. Maybe if I can't find it for this show notes, I'll find it for next week. But it was a study that had found that being spoiled, like having a plot or whatever spoiled, doesn't actually ruin your experience. Like it actually makes things a little easier to take in some ways, right? That's what this study had found, right? So I'll have to find that link. It was kind of interesting, an interesting take on the whole spoiler thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you remember, John, we used to go rent movies together, and I would not want to read the back cover of the VHS case because they often gave away too many plots. plot points, right? Or, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I know people who are that way about trailers. They just, they don't even want to see the trailers because trailers nowadays, especially because they do two or three or four trailers for each movie, plus they do TV commercials and everything else, you can pick up a lot. I mean, I had some pretty good instincts confirmed for things like Endgame because they were all right there on the trailers and the TV commercials. So.
Right, right, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, if you see something in a trailer and then you're sitting in the movie and you see that in the movie, your brain kind of goes, you kind of get a satisfied feeling, okay, that's how that fits into the story, right? Like, not how I envisioned it would kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even the difference between the Spider-Man trailer, which we just watched now, and the one that we saw, like, a month ago or whatever, right? There's quite a different take on the two. I mean, we know he's going on a school trip, but a different take on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And speaking of Game of Thrones.
Speaking of Game of Thrones and coffee breaks.
Are we talking about Daenerys Stormborn?
Yeah.
Versus the cup of coffee?
Yeah. Drinker of pumpkin spice.
Yeah.
Is that on her tags now? Drinker of pumpkin spice?
Yeah. This person has a tweet of Daenerys Stormborn of House Targaryen, first of her name, Queen of the Andals and the First Men, Protector of the Seven Kingdoms, the Mother of Dragons, the Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, the Unburnt, the Breaker of Chains, and Drinker of pumpkin spice.
Yeah.
That's funny because I put that comment in myself in our notes, and I also posted last week or just a couple, I think yesterday actually, in Twitter, without any reference, I just sort of said, I wonder what Emilia Clarke is going to be remembered for.
Yeah.
Which leads us to this story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's wild that in this this feast, in the latest episode, in the background, you have Daenerys, and there's like a Starbucks cup of coffee, like a to-go cup that you would get just there, completely unseen by all the production assistants, by the producers, directors, the actors themselves. Nobody noticed it went up on the actual stream for the episode. Fast forwarding to today, they by now have actually removed it digitally. But it caused quite the fervor when people started tweeting and retweeting this online.
Oh yeah, people were having a really good time. There was a lot of fun memes out there.
I have to admit, I did not notice this when I was watching live.
No, because the tables were covered with mugs and cups and stuff, and you're looking at the characters' faces because they were all giving each other side eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I guess they felt they had to. It's digital times and all that kind of stuff, and this doesn't exist in any sort of celluloid format or whatever. So they can go in and edit it. I had heard that the Apple version on iTunes hasn't been edited yet or fixed up yet. So I don't know. It's weird. Sort of it's George Lucas again, right?
Yep.
I think it's just.
Ooh, so that's a good question, Tim. So quick 30 seconds. What is your opinion of doing a fix like they had to do in this case?
Yeah, so what did they do? Turned it into like a stein of something? A Starbucks stein instead of a...
I think they erased it completely.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So where does that fall in the spectrum of artist intention versus now we have this power to fix these sorts of things?
Well, I know that there are scenes in several movies actually where there's like, you know, asteroids flying by and R2-D2 is one of the asteroids and I think the Millennium Falcon is one of the asteroids. I'm trying to think of what movies I've seen them in. I know in Phantom Menace, when they're going through the junkyard, is you can see the pod from 2001, Space Odyssey, in the junkyard. Whether that was placed there on purpose or not, but I mean, like, I get that it's, you know, it's not like there was a burning cigarette or something, but that kind of sort of what it is, right? I mean, there's a whole job in movie making called art direction. I think it's art direction or continuity, right? Where that the person is responsible for making sure that the hair is in the right position and if somebody has a cigarette, for instance, as they go from one scene to the other, it's sort of burned down to the same amount, or the amount of beer in the glass that the character is drinking is relatively the same as it was. And often it bothers a lot of people because when they see things, you know, from one scene to another where they, you know, the hair on the head and forehead moves and that kind of stuff, right? But I don't know. I mean, I think the point is that people are saying is that they spent so much money making these movies or movies, they're practically movies, right? These TV shows that, you know, it's a small thing, but yeah, why couldn't they fix that? If they can spend all the time on the dragons, making them look so realistic and, you know, burping and belching and on whatever the dragons do, but if they spend all that time on them, why wouldn't they spend that much time on this scene? And I could see from the, as you know, you and I both know, Jaime, we're both coders, right? And you know, when you're working with the code, you may not see something that, you know, in a peer review, someone might get caught or, you know, quality control or maybe the guy who's doing the color mixing on on the final mix of the image, you know, or the film footage or soundtrack people, nobody noticed, right? And because it's small and insignificant, right?
They said in the Inside the Episode special this week that this was the first episode of the season, too. The first scene that they filmed of the season that they started filming.
So they had tons of time to fix this and catch it, right?
Again, you could just say that, like, they weren't on their full game yet, because apparently that was one of the first things they filmed when they all came back to work to start shooting this season, was that feast.
Right.
And so someone, you know, was just like, back off my vacation. I'll just put my cup here. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just really weird to me, because normally there are, like, continuity people that try to make sure things look the same. And it's not like the era of putting this on film where, this was the best take, and when it came back from the processor, like a day later, we didn't even notice it, or it was too late. I mean, they saw this live, or like immediately after the live take, and be like, oh yeah, that's good. Move on. Let's do another scene somewhere else. I'm a little surprised that nobody said, hey, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. Let's redo that one.
Well, the North remembers. So the North remembers your coffee cup.
Yeah,
you can delete it from your screen, but we'll remember that coffee cup was there.
Exactly. You can't hide that one from us. That'll go down in the lore, you know, but what print do you have of Game of Thrones? Do you have the one with the coffee cup in it or not, right?
Well, if it's still on your PVR, you got to find a way to transfer that, because copy doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is. Oh, no, I don't have it on PVR. But if you had downloaded it from Netflix or wherever it is, it's HBO. Can you download from HBO?
Crave, yeah, Crave.
Can you download from them? I think you can, right?
You can, but I think it only lasts for a portion of time. I think you only get it for a while.
Right. Well, that's interesting. All right. So, what's next?
You, Space Command.
Me. This is an odd one. This came in through our. Ask me how I discovered this. Well, let me tell you. I got an email from a comment on our Spotcast website, and it came in from a supposed reader, but it's actually from one of the people involved in the production of a TV show or a show. I don't know if it's going to be streamed or whatever. Called Space Command, and apparently they're happily filming various episodes. And the headline of the article was that Nichelle Nichols has just finished shooting a bunch of scenes in this movie or in this show, right? And the clip I have here that was also in the email shows Doug Jones, you know, of Star Trek Discovery, and Robert Picardo of Star Trek Voyager, in a scene together. And you know, at the point where this clip starts, it's the two of them talking to each other, and it goes on to show and. If I can be honest, would you like me to be honest here, folks?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a little rough around the edges, but it's a pilot, I suppose. Hopefully, and the base scenes look interesting, but it's got that sort of, you know, I don't know, what was that other Roddenberry show that was out there for a while with Tarzan in it? Forgotten. Andromeda?
Andromeda, yes. Right?
Yeah, you know how Andromeda never quite had, it sort of had a weird edge to it. It wasn't, you know, or Babylon 5, you know, they were interesting stories, and there was a little bit of, you know, invisible rubber and that kind of stuff, you know, like the polish wasn't there like you would expect in a Star Trek, for instance, right? I mean, even Orville, I can't believe I'm saying this, but even Orville has a better polish than this show. So it'll be interesting to see what becomes of it, if it actually goes anywhere. But I just thought I would put it in here as an interesting, since we're a Star Trek podcast, it makes sense for us to talk about the fact, you know, what's Nichelle Nichols up to these days? Apparently she's working in this show. So
we'll keep our eyes open. You said it's out in July. You said,
yeah. This whole video isn't just this pilot, but it's introduced by the show creator, I guess showrunner, and he talks at the end of it too about, and he's got some scenes from the upcoming episodes as well. So I guess it's almost like, well, what was that other fan one we saw? Not the fan one, talked about it last season. It was another Star Trek that had Kirk and Spock, and it was the one that filled in between the original series and Next Generation.
Yeah. That was a fan one, wasn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. So a similar one. It's an interesting take on sci-fi. It's a different story than any of these other universes. So I have to keep an eye on it. Mm. That's all I got to say about that. So speaking of leaks, Jaime.
Yeah, the fine folks at Warner Brothers have had some fun. So if you're aware of the fact that sometimes movies, entire movies, will leak onto YouTube prior to the film's release, a supposed Detective Pikachu full movie leaked onto YouTube. But if you end up watching that, it turns out to just be an hour, 42 minutes, and 53 seconds of Detective Pikachu dancing to 80s workout music.
And apparently it's Ryan Reynolds, too. Motion capture,
I don't know. Is that what it said on the...
Yeah, well, I read an article about it. I think it's... I'm pretty sure it's Ryan Reynolds. I don't know if it's looped or what. I just skipped through it a couple of times, you know, to see... can't imagine him... I don't know if he'd do a motion capture for an hour and a half, but who does that?
Right.
You know?
That's a way to milk a joke.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, but it's interesting. It's funny, yeah.
That's good. You have to wonder if there's going to be, you know, more of those kind of things. You know, there are so many people looking for spoilers and leaks and all these other things. It really is a good opportunity to do some marketing.
Yeah, for sure. Sure. All right.
So I've got a couple of things. The news came out today that the Batwoman series has been picked up by the CW. We got the backdoor trailer for Batwoman this fall that just passed, with the crossover, the annual crossover between the Arrowverse series on there. So Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl. This is of note because it will essentially be the replacement in the lineup for Arrow, which is going to end after the shortened season that's coming up this fall. Mm-hmm. And it's also of note because the primary character is gay. So it'll be the first sort of main character headlined superhero tale with a featured gay character, which leads me into my next one, which is this came from Entertainment Weekly today, and I thought this was interesting that the Marvel Universe is apparently going to get its first major step towards LGBTQ representation. So the Russo brothers revealed to EW that that a major character is going to be revealed as gay in an upcoming film. And they said that there will be it's going to be someone who's openly gay, and they said that there would probably be more to follow after that. So the speculation is now on as to who the major gay character is. Anybody want to take a guess?
Which is this? Which show is this? Or what series?
So this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's going to basically be it. So it's safe to assume it's not Captain America or Iron Man or Black Widow, because they're all dead. I guess the question is, are there characters who didn't have romantic arcs previously? Not that that's a prohibitive thing, because obviously people can be sexually fluid, but the question is there somebody who's sort of outstanding? My first immediate thought went to Captain Marvel, because there is no romantic subplot to her story. It's not relevant to her. So that seemed like an easy one to sort of explore.
Right, right.
But yeah, I think it's good, and it's timely, and it's, you know, as we've been talking about how it was great to see a step forward in a primary black-centric character in Black Panther. We're going to get Shang-Chi, which is focused around an Asian character. I think it's absolutely time for that.
Interesting.
And in our continuing review of the world of streaming services, I may take note, Disney has apparently announced, so Bob Iger revealed to The Hollywood Reporter that he's interested in buying the rest of Hulu.
Oh, really?
So we talked about this a few episodes back, that obviously they now have a majority stake, Disney does, in Hulu, because they had their original stake, plus they had the stake that they got when they purchased Fox's assets. So the other two remaining portions were, one is 10% is owned by Warner, and 30% is owned by Universal, NBC Universal. So apparently they're interested in acquiring the NBC Universal portion, and they have an option to purchase a portion of the Warner piece as well. So it sounds like they're maneuvering to be the sole proprietors of Hulu in the not distant future, which would, as we also talked about, it would make sense, because that would give them the Disney Plus service. They could bundle it with the Hulu service. They also have ESPN Plus. So they could start creating themselves a nice little monopoly on required streaming services. And it also gives them a more mature platform to partner up with the sort of more PG platform that they've been looking at for Disney Plus. They could do the Runaways and the Ghost Riders and the Hellstroms and stuff like that on Hulu, and do all the stuff that they want to do there. They could revive those, you know, Netflix type series with the Jessica Jones and things like that. So yeah, it makes sense, but I think it's going to cost them a couple of shekels.
All right, nice. Okay.
And the last thing, just this afternoon, we got the first full teaser trailer for Watchmen, the HBO Watchmen TV series. I have read that book numerous times. I have seen the film adaptation. I have no idea what's happening in this trailer. It may well be based on some of the spin-off stuff that DC has done over the past 6 or 7 years. But to me, it looks unrecognizable other than that sort of future dystopia type feel that it has. But it's HBO, and it's Damon Lindelof, and it looks like it's going to be good. So I think it's certainly worth a try. But I can't say that you can tell anything from that 1 minute other than it looks weird. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any thoughts?
No, I was just going to ask, like, how close to the was the movie adaptation to the book itself? Like, was it close or?
It was close-ish. I mean, the challenge with those kind of works is that, you know, they are of their time. You know, we talked, I think, about this in the past about V for Vendetta. Those Alan Moore stories from the 1980s that have gone on to become, you know, now seminal works of graphic fiction. V for Vendetta, Watchmen, things like that. They can be modernized. They can be updated. You can tell them as 21st century stories, but they are about their time. They're about, you know, Thatcherism in the 1980s in England. They're about, you know, the socioeconomics of the time, about the Cold War, about, you know, so many themes that are in there. You have to change them substantially. And when you start doing that, and even the technological advances, the you know, sociological advances, the globalization advances, they are meant to be read with the mindset of when they were written, as you would do that with any work of now 40 or 50 or 60 year old art. So it's not the same thing. It's not as good. It never will be. There's nothing they could do that would make it as good, but that's not to say they'll be bad.
Right. Well, I didn't get the sense that when I watched Watchmen, it was of any time in particular, but it was definitely sort of a distant time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the idea behind Watchmen was that it was supposed to take, Alan Moore wanted to tell a story about using these certain superheroes and put them into the future. As to, you know, if they were these idyllic characters in the 1950s and 60s, you know, by the time they get to the 80s and they've lived through Vietnam and all these different things, what would they be like in that world? And from that perspective, it's awesome and it's amazing and it's brilliant and it's genius. But again, when you fast forward that another 40 years in the future, you know, the storytelling medium is different. The playing field is different. So it is a completely different thing. So how that gets told as far as the storylines here, what they do with that, where they go with that, I'm not sure, but I'm curious.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I heard a comment the other day. I think maybe we were talking about Doom Patrol and shows like that. Where was the other one? The other show that we watched recently was like Doom Patrol, the Umbrella Academy. They don't have cell phones, right? They don't, you know, they don't run around in sort of modern day. You know, they're not using Apple Pay and that kind of stuff, right? So it doesn't, and they don't fix any kind of sort of time to that because they don't have those. They're not using current technologies, right? Whereas then you take Sherlock, on the other hand, who had a BlackBerry, right? Was always texting people and stuff like that, right? And you had to look up the TV show to catch the messages and things, you know? So,
but it's funny how even those things now seem weirdly dated. Yeah. Like, my wife just watched Sherlock in this last 6 months, and she had never watched it before. I watched it when it was on. Yeah. And for me, it was genius. And when she watched it, she was like, is that a BlackBerry? You know, it's amazing how fickle we are with technology in our placements now, how quickly it can date things. You know, when you go from the era of flip phone to BlackBerry to smartphone, you know, it really does cement in your mind, especially for our people of our ages, what was happening then and where you were. And, you know, it's all recognizable time frames. Maybe 50 years from now, it won't matter. But right now, it really dates things.
Right. All right. Well, I guess we're here. Let's dig into the pumpkin spice latte. Last of the pumpkin spice lattes.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. Game of Thrones, season 8, episode 4, The Last of the Starks. Who's going to do the recap?
I did not take notes for a recap, but we can talk about
it. We can just wing it.
Thoughts of various things, right?
We can wing it.
Yeah, I've got notes if you, I mean, depends how fast you want to go at it.
Yeah, we want to go through quick. I don't think we need to recap the whole episode for people. We sort of talk about the high points, like, was it really necessary for Brienne and, never mind, and Jamie, you know,
yes,
to do that?
Yes, it was.
You think it was? I guess, I don't know. It's sort of Sam and Diane moment. That show got ruined. Cheers got ruined when
Yeah, but this is, I mean, they kind of were making googly eyes at each other in season three, and it is nice to see that payoff, especially because, you know, that's literally the only woman outside of his sister Jamie's ever slept with. Like, that was, that's big. Like, that's the fact that he did that, that he felt that way, and that he cock-blocked Tormund to do it is yeah. You know, it's a moment.
Oh, you think really the knighting was a cock-blocking, or?
Oh, I think there was some there, but I don't think that's where his mind was, because they were all thought they were going to die, but I think this totally was.
Right.
But, okay, so I think the bigger question is, how bad would that fire have smelled?
Which fire?
Yeah, the funeral pyre.
Oh, the funeral pyre is the very beginning of the episode. So it opens with a funeral where they are all saying goodbye to the people, and then they all light the torches, and they pan out, and you see, because originally you just sort of see the first few, and you see the people you know. You see Jorah and all the people who fell in battle, Beric Dondarrion and that. And then they pan back, and you see that it's, you know, there must be, like, you know, 20,000 bodies burning.
Yeah, true. And I wonder, like, what do they do? They have to stoke the fire after a little while, like, to keep it going? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's vile. It's the most horrible. As I was watching, I was like, oh, that's... it didn't look like they were doing it the next day. Like, by the time they gathered all those bodies and they put them out, it would have been around for a few days. That would not have been a fun... I don't think anybody was kissing those bodies before they went. I don't know.
But yeah, by the same token, though, you know, if this was Walking Dead, they would have to just, you know, they'd have to deal with those bodies right away, kind of thing, right? So who knows? I mean, and we don't know what's the source of the Night Walkers, whatever they're called. Night Walkers? What are they called? White Walkers. White Walkers. The Whites, yeah. Like, what was the nature of their proclivities? And did they have to dispatch these people, like, you know, within 24 hours or whatever, right? I'm sure it took a while to build the pyre, too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, that would be very, very gross.
Well, and I guess in wintertime, you can't dig, too, right? That's the other side of it, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Plus, I think, you know, as I think somebody pointed out online, I think all bodies get burned from now on, no matter how it plays out. Right. Anybody dies on Westeros, they got to get burned from now on.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they go from there, they go to that big party, right? They start off with the, you know, hey, we all survived, and then it turns into a bender.
Yeah. Exactly. And people are...
So we end up with Daenerys legitimizes Gendry.
Right.
And makes him a Baratheon. Right. And we see the drinking game between Tyrion and Pod and Jaime and Brienne.
Right.
We get the nasty looks going on at the head table as Sansa and Daenerys all, you know, shoot daggers at one another.
Yeah. I read an interesting story, and it'll probably come out a bit more as we go through this episode, but the whole making Daenerys a villain all of a sudden, or making her, you know, like in her discussion with Jon about, you know, don't tell anybody, and him saying, you're my queen, I'll do whatever you tell, and she says, I just told you, don't tell anybody, right? And what's the first thing he does?
Yeah, he tells somebody. Yeah.
He goes full Stark.
And they
goes
tell
full
two
Stark
friends.
In the situation.
They so tell
I have to tell people.
Full Stark?
Yep. Full Stark. Well, think about what undid his father, his uncle, in the first season, right?
Yeah.
He was a man of honor, and he had to do the right thing, and where did that get him? It got him the head on the chopping block.
Yeah, on the pike,
So, yeah, it's absolutely right. Full Stark is absolutely right. This is the kind of, you know, stupidity slash honor that ends up getting people with their head chopped off. Or, in this case, maybe dragon roasted.
Sure. Yeah. And, of course, they're looking for Arya, and she's nowhere to be found, and halfway through the episode, she shows... Well, she did show up. She does have a conversation with Gendry, right? He tries to propose, and...
Yep, Gendry decides that, he's going to get a castle, and he wants her to be the lady of the castle, and she says, that's not me, which is very, very good for her character. That's exactly what you would expect she would do. Although, boy, that's a tough look for Gendry.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I love you. We just had sex. We survived this huge battle. Marry me. No.
Well, it wasn't quite no. She was like, you're a great guy and all that kind of stuff, but I just want to be friends, right?
Well, she basically said, that's not me. Like, yeah. I'm never going to be the lady of a castle. I'm not going to give you a brood full of children. I'm a murderer and I've got some work to do, basically.
Yeah. You think she's still finishing off her list?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. I think unquestionably, as you were mentioning that scene, so... The next time we see Arya in the episode, she sees the Hound heading south on the King's Road, and she sidles up next to him on her horse, and he says, I'm going south, I have some unfinished business, and she says, me too.
Right.
And so he's clearly going to confront his brother for Clegane Bowl, the long-awaited Clegane Bowl, and she, I think, is headed down to say hello to Cersei.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love his line where he says to her, are you going to leave me for dead again? And she says, probably.
Probably, yeah. That's great. It is nice. this season has been very excellent in the fan service department about people, mm-hmm. you know, the little pairings. We got a moment with the Hound and Sansa. We've gotten the moments with Arya. You are getting these nice little paired up moments, you know, but those ones, like, it's nice to see those characters together again. Remember how good those episodes were.
Yeah, for sure. I think things come around. And of course, you know, half the army heads off towards the sea, right? And they get ambushed.
Yeah, splitting the army is always a good, that's always played out well in Game of Thrones. Yeah. So you should definitely do that.
Especially in the water.
So Daenerys takes her dragons and a bunch, and Missandei and Grey Worm, and they get on the boats and are going to sail for Dragonstone, which for anybody who knows the geography of Westeros is like 10 miles out to sea from where King's Landing is. So it's right there.
Right.
And then the rest of the army of the Unsullied, Dothraki, and the Northmen, led by Jon and Davos, are in on their horses headed down the King's Road towards there. We get the big ambush, right? We get this nasty ambush from Euron Greyjoy and the Iron Fleet. And yeah, big surprise move there. Rhaegal takes 3 scorpion bolts and is dead.
Right, yeah.
But didn't see that coming at all. Do you guys see that one coming?
No, and it was kind of surprising, like how, you know, I don't know, kind of quickly the dragon was dispatched when you think about it, right?
Yeah. What's your reaction to that one, Jaime?
Yeah, I see where they needed to get to this point to make it so that it's less of a, like an obvious win for the good guys, since they'll have, you know, the twin nukes of the dragons to attack King's Landing. I think they pushed really hard in this episode in general to emphasize the personality weaknesses that Daenerys has, mm-hmm. right? She's definitely got a problem with being impatient. She definitely has a vengeful side.
Oh, yeah.
That came up, you know, quite a bit, right? So Sansa was like, hey, like, we just exhausted ourselves fighting the dead. I don't think we should just immediately get up and turn around and go attack King's Landing. Like, that's a bad idea. We should rest. And clearly Daenerys did not agree and marched on ahead, splitting up the army, as we mentioned. And that causes some issues, right? There's even the advisors talking about, like, well, what the heck are we going to do? You know, we know the truth about Jon Snow. Because Jon Snow told people who shouldn't have been told. And Sansa
makes
it worse.
But Daenerys doesn't know that he's told them, right? That's the thing. Daenerys doesn't know that he's told them.
Right.
No, she will fairly soon, I think. But yeah, it was a strange sort of series of events. And it was really weirdly unsatisfying. I'd seen some criticism online, and I think it's very legitimate. And I felt it too. In the moment where Jon is trying to decide, he's basically gone to sort of say farewell to his family. And then he decides, okay, I'm going to tell them anyways, even though I told my girlfriend I wouldn't do this. I'm going to do it anyways. But then he doesn't actually do it. He asks Bran to do it. And then we don't see what happens. We don't see what the reactions are. I felt cheated by that. I really did. I felt like I wanted to see what Sansa and Arya's reactions were to that information. Yeah. And I really felt like that scene, I understand there's a lot of storytelling to do and a lot of heavy lifting in this episode, but I really wanted to know, see the looks on their faces, see what their expressions were, hear what they had to say when they got that information.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, do they feel threatened by it? You know, are they annoyed by it? Are they surprised by it? Yeah.
Well, and Sansa, you'd assume, was like, mwahaha, now I can figure a way out of having this woman be our queen.
Right, yeah.
As evidenced by the follow-up scene, which is her and Tyrion. And Tyrion basically says, you know, well, you know, what can you do? She's going to be the queen. And she says, well, actually.
What if there's another? Yeah.
And
but she's implying Jon, though, isn't she, in that statement?
She is. Yeah, she is. And then the follow-up to that is the conversation between Varys and Tyrion, where basically Varys says, you know, well, now it's not looking good. Daenerys has shown some of her, as Jaime mentioned, some of her negative proclivities. You know, maybe we should be thinking about Jon on the Iron Throne. People would support him better. People seem to like him better. So that was one of the most Game of Thronesy kind of moments we've had in years, with the two of them sort of conspiring to, you know, or we're talking about mutiny, we're talking about sedition, we're talking about, you know, betraying our queen. And then, of course, the episode continues with the scene that kills Rhaegal. They also, the Iron Fleet basically trashes Daenerys' fleet by firing those scorpion bolts in there, killing a bunch more of her people and getting rid of her ships. And then they also kidnap Missandei. And then the episode basically wraps up with a parlay between Daenerys and Tyrion and Cersei, where Tyrion basically pleads for her to surrender, lest they be riddled with dragon fire. Yeah. And Cersei tells the mountain to chop off Missandei's head, and he does, and that's it.
Yeah.
So Daenerys now, in the last two episodes, has lost her two most faithful advisors in Jorah last week and Missandei this week. She still has Grey Worm, who will not be thinking with a clear head because he just lost his girlfriend.
Right, yeah.
And she lost one of her dragons. So she's becoming extremely isolated as well.
Well, that's what I mean about the sort of, they're kind of pigeonholing her. But I want to come back to the point about her wanting to go and storm off right away. Well, if you think about it, her whole modus operandi has been that. She's just kept moving forward, right? She's not she's not slowed down. She's not given the Unsullied arrest, you know, in any of her battles, right? Did she ever kick back and celebrate after a victory taking over a town?
Well, no, but there was the ongoing complaint during previous seasons where, you know, she was in Meereen for a long time. Yeah. People were getting really sick of that, where she was just dithering in Meereen for so long, and then they finally came over the ocean.
Right.
There was like two seasons there where they just sort of meandered in Meereen, and some of those stories were not great.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and the we're not surprised that Cersei did what she did. I mean, that's Cersei, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be surprised if she didn't do that, right?
Yep. So the question becomes, you know, where do they go from here? I mean, I think, you know, the easy answer is next week's going to be a big fight. You know, we know that Miguel Sapochnik, who did episode 3, our big, the last night, the long night, rather, the long night battle episode, is coming back to do the direction of next episode.
Right, okay.
So we know it's going to be a battle-heavy episode. We'd assume it's going to be the Lannister forces, the sacking of King's Landing, the big fight.
So do we have three episodes left or two?
Two episodes left.
Right.
So the next episode is directed by Miguel Sapochnik, and the last episode is by the series creators, Benioff and Weiss.
Hmm.
So safe to say, I think next one is going to be the throwdown. We're finally going to get the queen versus the queen. The question is, you know, who lives, who dies? How does it play out? Does Daenerys make it to the end? Does Drogon make it to the end? You know, can anybody restrain Daenerys from brutally murdering everybody in town, and or Cersei, who may or may not have supplies of wildfire stocked all over?
That's
King's
true.
Landing?
I was just thinking, what resources does she have? Because we really haven't looked at that since, you know.
Well, clearly they've been busy making scorpions, so there's a bunch
of
those.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and Daenerys' army is pretty weakened by the fact that, you know, they lost half the Dothraki, half the Unsullied, and a bunch of the support from the north. She's lost all her boats in this last, you know, flurry. So, you know, they get weaker and weaker, and they've gone from three dragons when she first came over to one dragon. You know, as Jaime said, the nuclear codes are, you know, going fast. And not to mention the fact that there's a new missile defense plan in place in King's Landing. So.
Right.
What do you think, Jaime? How does this play out?
I'm not 100% certain, but I do know that I'm in the group of people who want a Drogon ghost buddy cop spinoff. And as part of that, I have to like think, man, I don't think Jon Snow is fit for the throne.
Yeah,
given his treatment,
because he didn't say
ghosts.
Goodbye to his dog.
Yeah, like there's the aspect of like, all right, like I'm obviously, you know, full disclosure, biased as a dog owner. So I was like, oh, I would never leave my dog like that, right?
Yeah.
But the other part is like, well, let's think back to the beginning of the episode. Why did Daenerys bestow this Baratheon gift on Gendry? And that was to help solidify having an ally somewhere,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And Jon Snow and like all the Starks are really, really bad at doing this. At least the men are, right? And so, you know, it even just kind of shows like, dude, like you got to go, you know, show some affection and show companionship to the person who's by your side this whole time. And if that's the way you're going to run the kingdom, like you're going to get a knife in the back at some point.
Yeah, pretty quickly.
Yeah. I guess the flip side of that is that he didn't say goodbye to his dire wolf, which is not good form. And then there was a lot of people out there who were a little ticked at him, and justifiably. But he does also, he says goodbye to Tormund, who says he's taking his the wildlings back up north. He says goodbye to Sam and Gilly reveals she's pregnant. So he gets those like tearful goodbyes. I guess there's only so many tearful goodbyes you can do in a row before it becomes tedious. Although I think I'd rather have seen him say goodbye to the dire wolf than one of them, probably. But you know, it was, there felt like some some finality in the North in the episode too. That maybe that's the last we'll see of those characters too.
Interesting.
No more Wolf. No more Sam and Gilly. No more Tormund. It's gone back to lie with the giant women.
Yeah. Right. So who knows? Maybe Ghost will show up and save the day in the end. There. Who knows?
Somehow, I think he's gone to go into the great farm in the North.
Yeah, I don't know, but doesn't Ghost save John a few times and just out of nowhere?
He does.
You're on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Saves him from that white that's going to kill him. That's how he ends up with impressing the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Right, right, right. All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens next week. You know, there'll be,
two episodes to
finale,
go. It's exciting.
Finale. Two to go. All right. Let's move on to the Orville. The Orville, this is the finale, right? Season finale, the last two episodes of the Orville.
The last two episodes we haven't talked about since they had them on the air. So I threw my notes in here, but I don't know how far we want to get into this stuff. But we can basically summarize it as Orville did two Star Trek episode homages. Yeah. They didn't do them badly. As a matter of fact, I thought they were actually decent. Mm-hmm. So the first one was Yesterday and Yesterday and Yesterday, episode 13. They did the homage to the TNG episode season 6, episode 24, Second Chances. That's the one where there's two Will Rikers. This one was the two Kellys. So the commander there ends up basically transporting a version of Kelly from the past to the Orville. She ends up in this weird situation where current Kelly doesn't want to date Ed anymore, so she does, and they end up going on dates, and it's very weird. I'm not going to digress too much into this, the idea is basically
because you think about it, he already knows tons about her and she knows nothing about him. That was
creepy. It was very weird. So in the idea of the episode is that at the end of the episode they send her back into the past and they wipe her memory so that she can't remember what's happening, so she doesn't have a vision of her own future. But at the end of the episode, the twist is that it didn't work. The memory wipe didn't work. And instead of going back and continuing her life normally, where she ends up dating Ed, marrying Ed, and their careers play out the way they were, she says no, and it creates an alternate timeline. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
So then we start episode 14, The Road Not Taken, which is a ripoff of Star Trek TNG episode 6, season 6, episode 15, Tapestry. This is the one where we're basically gone into the alternate timeline. What would have happened if? So this is, Tapestry was about how if Picard hadn't been stabbed through the chest, if he hadn't been so brash, what would have happened? And then we see the type of person they would have been if he hadn't made that decision. In this case, it's Kelly makes that decision and has ripples through the timeline. And it turns out that the Kalons wiped out half the universe because there was no Ed there to stop them, because Ed didn't become a captain, because Ed didn't have Kelly, and all the circumstances played out differently. Episode is notable because we got to see the return of Halston Sage as Alara in probably the worst and most wasted cameo I've ever seen in any show of all time.
I'm not going to go with you.
they brought her back. She shows up in a dun 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 right before the commercial moment.
Yeah.
She's in like 4 minutes after that and then says, you guys have a good trip. I'm out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the stupidest, worst cameo I've ever seen in anything I've ever watched.
Right.
What a waste to bring her back for that. But anyways, the end of basically the episode, again, it's a good episode. It's really interesting how they played the timeline. They go back to Earth. They find the Orville. They reverse it. They send Kelly and the Doctor back into the past. Or they send the Doctor back into the past to basically reset Kelly's mind. It works. And time continues on normally, theoretically, from there. And that's the end of the season.
Wait, so the Doctor goes back, resets Kelly.
Yeah.
What happens to this future Kelly on this new timeline? The whole timeline disappears?
That's the idea, is that because they set the Doctor back from there, that resets the timeline and everything continues forward in that timeline from there. Now, again, my head still hurts from last week's discussion about time.
Yeah, so this is like I listened to that episode again. So this is like the Hulk conversation with the Ancient One, where maybe the Doctor was always supposed to go back and wipe her memory, and that's the one.
So you could, all right. So first, I guess
it works the end.
It works the end. Much ado about nothing, right? Like it was good. I thought the both episodes were sort of interesting. in their way, not done badly at all. I thought there was, they were enjoyable. The Kalon flying detachable laser heads were really good.
Why didn't they use those before? That's my question.
I know. Well, that's
well, a maybe they didn't develop in the the timeline.
True,
differently,
yeah, different timeline. I forgot. Yeah. But there is an Isaac, though.
Yes, there is an Isaac, but he apparently was not not stationed the same way and had a different interaction and whatever. So I guess first I'd like to ask you both your impressions of this two-part season ending finale, and then I have three interesting facts about the Orville that I'd like to take up with
what
you guys.
I can say, I'll say very briefly about this, was these last two episodes kind of redeemed Orville a little bit, kind of, sort of, maybe, right? Because they were better than most of the episodes throughout the season. I mean, other than the, the dun-dun-dun sleeper agent Isaac, that was a kind of a cool twist. It reinforces in my mind that Kelly's the smart one on the ship, or the smart one of the two, of the couple, right? It's like you said, like in some cases they try too hard for this fan service that you're talking about, you know, like in Game of Thrones, like the whole bringing back Alara, like why bother, you know? I wanted to just leave a Starbucks coffee on Captain's desk and be done with it, you know? So, you know, that's my opinion. What do you think, Jaime? You're the big fan.
Yeah, I think I come from a different angle. So the first episode, the first half of the two-parter, I did also recognize it as being like the Will and Thomas Riker episode of TNG. I was pretty impressed with how different the actress was for Kelly from her normal self and her younger self. And the makeup folks who made her look different, even though it's the same actress. So that was pretty cool. What did come to my mind was like, yeah, it's kind of weird that Ed would be dating her because he'd have all this knowledge of, you know, about her. And it would be like a very seriously one-sided relationship from a power dynamic standpoint. Including, I was like, wow, he would be an incredible mind-blowing lover from her perspective, because he would know, you know, like 5 to 7 years, however long it was, 7 years ago, worth of like information of the stuff she's into that she doesn't even know she's into.
That's what I'm saying. That was the creepy part, right?
Yeah. By retrospect, would that make her a terrible lover?
Yeah, he'd probably be like kind of disappointed. I'm like, oh, well, let me show you some stuff here. Let me skip a few steps.
Yeah.
I went into it unspoiled. I didn't know it was going to be a two-parter, so I was actually pretty thrown when it doesn't end like happy at the end. I thought we were just going to say, oh yeah, here's the loving recap sort of thing of how they got to be where they're at. So going into the second of the two-parter, I was sort of taken by how Star Wars-y it was in terms of the pace and action, and even some of the music was very Star Wars-y, and they had some Star Wars reference, like with Yaphet being sort of a
Return of the Jedi
Jabba's palace, which itself is also a reference to the Wizard of Oz big giant door, who goes there sort of thing. Also was unspoiled with Alara coming back. I think I kind of have a different perspective of like, I had no idea she would ever come back. I thought like maybe she'd Tasha Yar at some point, you know, if the Orville stayed on for several more seasons. So it was kind of a more of a nice surprise to me.
Well, I guess that was like a throwback to Tasha Yar in a sense, right?
Yep. Alternate timeline. You can bring back dead characters or characters who've left the show.
Yeah. And I think it might have been thrown in there is kind of a, she wasn't super important to the plot line. And I wonder if it was because in the meta about this whole show, there's tons of people wondering like, oh, did she suddenly leave? Because people kind of think she and Seth MacFarlane were dating and maybe they had a bad breakup and that's why she's suddenly off the show. I think this might have been we're totally cool. We're friends.
Yeah.
Moving on. If they even had a relationship, it's not even clear if they did or not.
It just felt so inconsequential. Like her part of the storyline just didn't have any gravitas. Like it wasn't like, oh God, you're like, you know, it was just like she had the MacGuffin that they needed to solve the problem. Like, eh.
Yeah.
Like it just felt disappointing that way. Like I thought she was a strong character. She's one of my favorites from the show. And I think the season's actually suffered by her loss, because I certainly don't think that Callie is as interesting a character. Tala. So I think that was a little bit of a letdown for me.
All right.
Are you ready for your three facts about the Orville?
Yes, let's get onto that.
Ready for the three facts.
Give us
three facts. Here we go. The Orville has yet to be renewed for season 3.
Oh.
It is now owned by the Disney Corporation.
Oh, really?
Huh. Here is fact number 2. Season 2 saw a 27% drop in viewers from season 1.
Wow.
Fact number 3. Seth MacFarlane's exclusive contract with Fox expires in June.
Does that jeopardize Family Guy too?
Yes.
Ah.
So the question becomes, does he re-sign another exclusive deal with Disney to produce Family Guy, American Dad, Orville, and continue in those things? Does Fox, which owns the network but no longer owns the show, want to have a Disney property on their airwaves?
Maybe he's going to host Hockey Night in Canada.
Will Seth MacFarlane want to re-sign with Disney to produce shows for the Fox channel, or does he want to go get paid Netflix money?
Interesting.
And so all of these things are tied into the fact that while people are, I think, broadly assuming online, the Orville will be back for season three and continue forward, I don't think I'd put that in pen yet.
Well, it's kind of interesting what I just sort of, like, the tying up of this two episodes, it almost feels like you could end the show here, right? Because
I was happy that it was not a cliffhanger of like, oh no, we never get to know what happened sort of thing.
Yeah,
it could be a satisfying end.
Yeah, it's like, what was the other show I used to watch that got canceled? Dark Matter? Dark Matter, yeah. Ended on a cliffhanger, but rather than like a lot of shows just sort of tie things up nicely in a bow at the end of the season, you know, it ties up loose ends. You could go on to the movie from here, right?
Yep. I know. I saw those. I was doing a little digging around about the Orville because it occurred to me at the end of the season. I thought, it's funny because I've seen some announcements of shows that have been bought up, been renewed for next year, and CW's already made its announcements. And I thought, that's funny. I don't remember seeing anything about the Orville. And I started down this rabbit hole and came across those three facts and thought, those are all very telling things. Very interesting. Independent of one another. And then when you take them collectively, it's hard not to think, I wonder what this all might mean.
Yep.
Indeed.
Because if he signs somewhere else, the Orville's gone because he'll be creating new things because Disney owns Family Guy and owns American Dad and owns the Orville. So unless he can figure out a way to get a place to buy those rights from Disney, good luck with that. He'll have to move on to the next thing. If he signs a new deal with Disney, it's a question of whether, even if he signs a new deal with Disney, whether Fox wants to bring the Orville back because Fox airs it even though Disney would be producing it. So it's a real question of a lot of things have to align to get a third season out of this.
I could see it going to Disney Plus and or like Hulu, depending like if Fox ended up not showing it on the airwaves. And so it could be sort of the CBS All Access Star Trek Discovery sort of route. Not quite the same because it clearly would not be the marquee like Discovery was.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's a good observation. I think that's probably a more likely outcome because we've already seen Fox has started canceling shows and it'll be interesting to see what they do because again, they used to produce and put on their own shows. Now they don't own a production facility anymore. So Fox's shows are all going to be bought from other people.
Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to that network lineup for next year. And it'll be interesting to see if I assume they still have contracts and writer first refusal on a lot of these shows, you know, the Simpsons and Family Guy and you know, all these Fox properties that now belong to Disney as far as the production rights. I assume that they get to continue airing them as long as they want to, but if they start turning down things because they want to go a different direction, I wonder if we're going to start seeing them migrating to the Hulus and the Disney Pluses or ABC.
True.
Yeah. Interesting. Maybe they'll become the alternate fact network. All right, well, let's move on to the watch list since we're way over time here. So my first one here is a very simple one. I started watching Killing Eve Season 2, which I guess started a couple of weeks ago. I think I've missed one episode in the PVR snapping. If I don't watch things every 2 weeks, I lose episodes. But yeah, I think I'm into the third or fourth episode now, and it's a great show. I don't know if you guys have watched it yet, but when you get around to it, you'll really enjoy it.
Cool. That's been on my want to watch list for a while, but
I don't think it ages too, because it doesn't have any of the sort of fingerprints of you got to watch it now kind of thing, because you use computers and stuff like that. But yeah, it's really interesting story. And I don't know, maybe if you lived in Europe, it might be a different feeling. But yeah, for us, you know, it has a bit of sense. The character Villeneuve and the character Sandra Oh play are really, really interesting characters. So interesting interplay between the two of them. Anyway, that's mine. Maime, what do you got?
Mine is a fan video from a Game of Thrones fan who has put together Arya and the Hound. So sort of a almost like a trailer of what would that be if it was a buddy comedy between those two going around. And I thought that was kind of amusing to watch because I definitely enjoyed the interaction between Arya and the Hound when they were sort of roaming the land and trying to make their way to the Vale sort of thing. And this sort of follows along with that. There's also other ideas from other people in this article of like Sam and Gilly plus eight. It's like the John and Kate plus eight sort of thing, and other ones that we'll have in the show notes for those of you transporting at home.
Nice.
Cool. You got anything, John?
Yeah, the only one I will flag is that I did manage to catch up on a couple of my shows this week, and the one that I can't get enough of and that I'm dying for more of is Happy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have been watching or staying on top of Happy, but last week's episode was spectacular. It was absolutely spectacular. Again, I'm not going to throw too many spoilers out there, but Happy makes some new imaginary friends, and it turns out very, very, very graphically. It's really hilarious. Mm. That show never stops making me laugh out loud, and it is so good, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the last few episodes this season.
Cool. Yeah, I have it queued up on the PVR. I just haven't got around catching up on it yet. But yeah, that's next, I think, actually.
Yeah, I've got the same. I might end up binging them once the season ends.
Yeah.
Is what I think, because that's what I ended up doing with the first season of Happy.
Yeah, it's on Netflix sort of like now, isn't it?
Watching through.
I think the first season's on there now, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Alrighty. Oh, by the way, I did miss a couple of episodes of Twilight Zone. I don't know. I guess my PVR has lost its mind again. But no surprises there since it's controlled by Rogers. But so I went to Crave to watch the rest of Twilight Zone. And it comes up on Crave as CBS All Access. Like the splash screen at the very beginning, right? So, which is interesting. We don't normally see that in Canada, right?
Mm, I see. Yeah, they are looking to launch that in Canada. I think we
That's
talked
true.
About
yeah,
that
yeah.
episode ago. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I can't watch any more episodes because I canceled my subscription and they don't prorate, so I was able to watch a few more episodes, but it ended today, actually, and I'm looking at the calendar.
Oh, really?
Today is the very last day, so...
Well, you'll be able to catch up in the fall when we get another season of something you want to watch, like Picard or whatever comes next. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's sort of the thing. Like, right now, I'm subscribed to HBO for Game of Thrones and binged through and watched all of season two of Westworld, and I'll do just like the same thing here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @devwithahair.
And Jonathan, if people want to find you, where do they find you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as @JPKNews.
And I'm on most of the socials as Tim Mitra, TimMitra, but Twitter is the best place to get a hold of me. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spockcast website at spockcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter @Spockcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the #AskSpockcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spockcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.